the University Tower Chimes, bringing another session of Ask the Professor, the show in which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right, from the Department of English, it's Professor Heather Hill Vasquez.
Hello, everyone.
How are you?
Pretty good, although I can't believe how quickly the semester is flying by.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the older we get, the faster it goes.
How
I'm getting older.
And the students all stay the same age.
How is the college search going?
The college? Oh, Olivia. Okay. She definitely has some set ideas about where she wants to go and where she doesn't want to go.
Sure.
But it's going pretty well.
Good.
Yeah.
Continue to send her our good vibes so that she's able to make her decision.
Thank you.
And stick to
it. If you want, we'll still send her some swanky packages from our school.
Oh, yeah, she did apply to CCS as well. Absolutely.
Okay.
She has applied to CCS because of her art interests.
A man who knows a lot about CCS would be Professor Dave Chow.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Mm-hmm. What do you know about the school?
Not a heck of a lot. I just show up and collect a paycheck every now and then.
Well, you've got to get ready for Noel night.
Oh, don't remind me. I am not at all ready for that thing. We just sent out applications for students and alumni, and I'm expecting the deluge of people all over the place.
I'm looking forward to meeting them.
Mind you, Jim, people are getting ready to have their decks built on your sales alone.
Yeah.
And Jim spends a fair amount of money. Man, is your family coming down this year?
That's the plan.
Okay.
That's the plan.
To buy Christmas gifts and ornaments and stuff.
I'm going, even if I can't get my spouse to come, I am going.
Yeah.
We'll smuggle you in. Yeah, you guys.
It's a great night.
According to the Farmer's Almanac, it's going to be quite a mild start to winter, so I believe it will be perfect.
Well, so summer is going to finally bleed into winter about early December?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, right. We'll all be in shorts for Noel night. That'll be fun.
Ooh, no, that wouldn't.
Someone who would love to have shorts during winter, it's Professor Dan Maggio.
I wear shorts all the time.
I know you do. You're sort of like the Mike Bernanke of your time.
But it's time to move on,
yeah,
I think.
It is.
So it's getting a little chilly out.
The bad news about this late leaf turn is that it's probably all going to happen in like 48 hours, and then everybody's just going to have to rake for like 5 straight days.
Yes.
We live in a deciduous forest here in Detroit, primarily.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing. I'm inspired when I think of plants in your shirt, Professor Jim Tubbs of Religious Studies, because it's such a verdant green.
Yes, I'm green today.
You know, I actually made a note in my notes the next time that Jim was on the show to see if you noticed if I introduced you the way Kathy used to introduce you as Professor James Balfort. Oh. I used to love that.
Who was that?
I was love that. Oh, I think that's the coolest middle name ever. That's all I got to say. Continuing around the table, Professor Joe Avocet is here with us from Communication Studies.
I am.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Excellent. So what fantastic bit of media from this last week can you drop on us that we probably wouldn't have seen?
Well, I don't really watch any television.
Well, yeah, but you study. You know.
I've been sort of riveted by the Vietnam documentary.
Ah, yeah. And another I'll be
finishing
Ken Burns.
Yeah, I'll be finishing up part 10 tonight.
Okay. Now, I read a critique this morning without having seen any of it that there seems to be a downplay of a lot of protests at home throughout the series, like focusing on the war itself.
They've been focusing on almost every episode, a lot of attention.
I thought so.
I haven't seen any of it, so
there may not be that logical treatment academics have given to it, but certainly there is discussion throughout the documentary. Okay. I don't know if anybody else has been watching.
The Chronicle had an article by a historian about how so many historians were panning it because it didn't do serious, you know, critical history. And yet, Ken Burns is getting people to pay attention to what was going on and catch up with. So this article was really about, well, which is really better, you know?
Sure. Well, I mean, attention paid towards these things is something that Ken Burns does very well without coming off as too
very
much
well.
Of P.T. Yes. Barnum, right? So pretty much everything he's ever touched is gold. Just has a way about putting those images together.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, the Civil War series, some of the music that he used in there, I cannot hear those pieces of music without remembering
absolutely
what was going on in the...
Even when people use them for comedic effect,
yes,
that's what I think of. You mm-hmm. know? My wife and I, to this day, whenever someone makes a very, very obvious statement of something that just happened, we sign the statement, Mary Chestnut. Because she was the one that wrote all the letters that he used in the series. So like, Emmett just spilled all of his milk. Yes, yes, that sort of thing. Folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win an autographed photograph of the Ask the Professor panel and the ATP mug. And if you don't stump the panel, you can win a prize too, the autographed photograph. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/ATP or find us on Facebook. We're going to finish up some questions from the lovely Amber Hubley. I wonder if it's Hubley or Hubley. We'll go with Hubley for today. These were Professor Tubbs' ocean liners, or maybe just a lot of ship questions.
Ships. So far.
What is the name of the boat in Herman Melville's Billy Budd? Another classic HMS title.
SS Minnow?
poor Billy.
What if I said Iron
TV.
Man?
I didn't think you watched TV.
Old shows.
All Starks? The Tony Stark?
It's not called the Tony Stark.
Pepper Potts?
What if I said Thor?
Thor?
I said Iron Man and I said Thor.
The Avenger?
It's the Avenger.
The HMS yes. Avenger.
Avenger. I love how the first thing that came out of your mouth in our last show was the Resolute.
Well, there have been several British ships named Resolute in several different wars.
That's right. Some of them were made into desks. What is the title given to the largest ship still operating the Great Lakes?
The title?
Yes. I've actually seen this ship before.
You mean the name of the ship or the title of that ship?
The title. The title. Or you can give me the name of the ship, too.
The Titan.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest?
The Ore King? The title given...
The Horizon Hugger.
No. She's called Queen of the Lakes.
Queen
is her name.
Of the Lakes.
Oh, and so currently, legal. This is wild, about 3 years ago, 2 years ago, just on a whim, vacationing in the northern lower peninsula, we decided to drop everything and go to the Sioux. And this ship, it's the Paul Tregurtha, is 1,013 feet in length, was going through the locks. And you're like right up against it at the locks. It's super cool.
Yeah.
And now I know it's the biggest ship in operation. Finally, Amber says, 3 questions about ocean liners or cruise ships per Professor Tubbs.
Okay.
Which actress guest starred the most times on the TV show The Love Boat?
Which actress?
Suddenly it turned into a 1980s TV question. Guested on the show.
Not Ava Gabor.
Nope.
No,
hold on.
If you can get, I have... The first place and the tie for second place.
Florence Henderson.
Florence Henderson.
Are you kidding
is
me?
Second place.
She's gotta be.
Second place at 10. She's tied with Charo.
I was going to say
Charo. Coochie.
And think of another classic sitcom motherly presence.
June Lockhart?
No. The winner at 14 appearances is initials M.R.
Marion Ross.
Marion Ross.
Oh, yeah, from Happy Days.
Wait a minute. She ended up. Hold on.
Everyone with a sitcom that had ended or failed ended up on this show.
Yes. Didn't she end up marrying Captain Steubing?
Really?
I think
Gavin
so. In one of the episodes,
wow.
I think she ended up marrying him, if I remember.
On the show or in real
on the
life?
Show.
On
not,
the show.
Not real life, yeah.
Wow. Oh.
I guess swore she ended up marrying him. I can't remember the name of the character.
Oh, man. We need to do some research. Who played the captain? What actor played the captain of the ill-fated Poseidon? In the Poseidon Adventure.
Oh, it was...
they were going... Remember, Gene Hackman and those guys were going one way. They were going the other direction.
The captain, I think it was Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah, it was Leslie Nielsen. I was about to say.
Yeah, because remember, Poseidon Adventure 2 was about those guys.
Huh.
About their journey.
Did not see the sequel.
Don't worry, you didn't miss much.
Well, if they had seen Airplane, they would have known not to let them drive the ship.
Yeah, true. Mm-hmm.
And Don't Call Me Shirley.
Don't Call Me Shirley.
Okay, remember, the largest ship on the Great Lakes is the Paul Tregurtha... 1,013 feet. What company lays claim to the world's largest cruise ship?
Royal Caribbean, probably.
Royal Caribbean. Can you guess, starting with one of those big Great Lakesers at 1,013 feet, how big the Royal Caribbean Harmony is seas is?
In what, in length?
Feet. Yeah.
10,000
length? Oh, no, it's pretty close. It's about 1,100, I think.
Yeah, it's 1,188.
Oh,
yes,
that's
1,188.
It.
feet.
Yeah, but think about it, Dan. It's still got to go through blocks.
It's tonnage that counts. No. You know, over 200,000 tons. I mean, it's a big ship.
Oh, I'm just picturing like a...
The Titanic was 47,000.
That's right. That ship next to the cruiser from the Great Lakes, and I would imagine that that would be much smaller.
I'm sorry. I can't help but think of one of my favorite Seinfeld quotes is when Kramer is getting his laps in by swimming in the Hudson. He's like, "You swam in the busiest public waterway in the United States?" He's like, "You know, technically Norfolk has more gross tonnage." That's exactly the argument you gave, Jim. Well, that's awesome.
What I would have said was, "Wow, and you're still here."
Yeah, exactly.
I remember watching Bobby Kennedy on television say, "Well, if you fell into the Hudson River, you'd dissolve before you drowned."
Oh my gosh.
Terrible.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, like Cleveland. We had a pretty bad reputation.
Mistake on the lake kind of thing.
Oh my. We have another set of questions here from Anonymous. They're all about the U.S. Supreme Court. The prof should be able to answer 75% of these 15 questions.
Really?
Okay.
If we wanted to.
Yeah. In 2005, let's see, Hall and looks like
Oates?
Eli.
Oh.
Hall, Eli, and Grossman published the Oxford Guide to the Supreme Court. So here we go.
Okay.
When and where was the first session, when and where, of the Supreme Court held? Hmm. We're looking for a building and we're looking for a year.
Independence Hall, Philadelphia?
No.
It would have been after that.
It's around 1776?
New York City?
It was later. It was New York City.
It would have had to be after 1780.
Giving it to Heather, the Royal Exchange in New York City, but what year?
1792.
I got 1790 here. February 2nd, 1790.
Where's Kendra when we needed her?
Yep. Know? Somewhere in the middle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Today, in the modern era, we have 9 justices. In 1790, there were?
7.
Oh, 5.
Partial credit. 6. 6. There are only 6 justices. Why would you go for the even number?
Yeah,
that's so silly. Because
they didn't learn from experience yet. So we need
a... They have to do it like Survivor. It's like 3 against 3. And it's like, all right, whoever builds a fire faster, gets their point made. You know,
whoever can burn the Constitution faster.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my. Oh, and what year did we transition to having 9 justices? I'm assuming that took a... Amendment to the Constitution.
Let's see.
1924.
It was way before 1924.
1846.
1847. It's later than all of those years.
1901.
Earlier than that year.
1862.
1869 is what it was. 9 justices. Seems like a good number,
very
right?
Good, Jim.
Good old 9. And we'll take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback. 1998.
On my left, one of the original founding fathers of Ask the Professor from the Department of History, Professor Emeritus, former chair, Fred Hayes.
Yes. Oh, thank you, Ed.
I want to begin this program, which is the last program I will be moderating, with a set of questions that were actually sent to Borders by Bert Tilley of Atala, Alabama. Bert has been one of our regular questioners for, it seems like, forever. He says, "Good luck, Edwin, George, and Sarah. Don't be a stranger, but stay strange." Thank you, Bert. Yeah. This U.S. industrialist made cars, the Hoover and the Grand Coulee Dams, aluminum foil, and the Liberty Ships. Who was he?
Henry Kaiser.
That's right. That's right.
He made the Kaiser roll, too.
Yeah,
After he got through being Emperor of Germany.
Yeah. There you go. What deformity had Kaiser Wilhelm II?
His arm was withered. His left arm.
It occurred during his birth. What was it?
His withered arm.
That's right.
Royalty is itself a deficiency.
Yeah.
Did he pitch for the Tigers?
And we're back with some great questions about the Supreme Court. let's see. The new Supreme Court building saw its first session, 7 of October, 1935. How many cases were argued on that first day?
None.
That is correct. No other information is given, but the answer is 0.
I figured they opened up the building, kind of like...
Had a party.
Yeah.
They all got drunk.
Yeah. Called it a day.
That was back around the time that Franklin Roosevelt was trying to pack the court anyway.
Oh,
I think the next year he did try that.
Oh, my gosh. When was the first African-American attorney admitted to the Supreme Court's bar? What year? The dates are given too. Here's a hint. It's February 5th.
1959.
It was 18 something.
Oh, well, good.
1895.
1869.
Earlier. It says 65. 1865. February 5th.
Right at the end of the Civil War.
At the end of the Civil War. However, the first female attorney admitted to the Supreme Court bar was in what year?
1896?
Ish. How about 1879?
Oh, 1879.
Wasn't until nearly, more than 10 years later, right? So that's...
She's buried in the Congressional Cemetery in Washington.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. It doesn't give the name, so... But it gives me March 3rd. We have that to go on. Must have been popular months, February and March, for doing justice. Who was the first African-American justice, and in what year was he sworn in?
Thurgood Marshall in 1967.
That is exactly correct. It was October 2, so relatively close to the date we're recording this show. Thurgood Marshall. Who was the first female justice?
Sandra Day O'Connor in 1982, I think it was.
81 is 81. What it says here, September 21st.
Why did she retire again? I'm trying
to remember. No comment.
Why did she retire? Yeah. Well, her husband had Alzheimer's, and she...
Okay, I couldn't remember why she retired.
Okay.
We have...
I wish she hadn't, but she did.
Can she come back?
We wish.
Oh.
She's still alive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And still lecturing.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
I'm still thinking that Kate McKinnon thing on Saturday Night Live.
Right. Okay. Who were the first president and vice president-elect who visited the Supreme Court in what year? Never heard this before.
Me neither.
Ooh.
Because presidents usually don't go to the Supreme Court.
William Howard Taft?
No, it was way later.
Let's go with FDR.
No.
Kennedy and Johnson.
No. It was
Bush.
Yeah, you know, it says here, I mean, you got to get something right. It was Reagan and H.W. Bush, 1980, right after they were elected.
Why?
Treaty or something?
I don't get it. It was right. It says November 11th, which means it literally was in a few days of them being elected. And then, I mean, they didn't at least have the burden of the presidency on their shoulders, but that's weird.
They just want to see what the basketball court looked like.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg goes up for a layup, you know, that sort of thing. Who was the first female justice who issued the oath of office to a presidential inauguration, and to whom and when?
Clinton?
LBJ?
No.
First female justice.
Well, it has to be after 1981.
That's the
first time we got it.
It'd be Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Sandra Day O'Connor for...
We'll work backwards and see if you guys can get it if I tell you it's 1989.
That would have been for the inauguration of George H.W. Bush.
Right.
And Sandra Day O'Connor was the only one on the court then.
Right, but she didn't swear him in. Somebody else did.
But you said the first female justice.
Right, to issue the oath of office to Vice President Dan Quayle.
Oh.
It seems like a little bit of a goose egg for poor Justice O'Connor, as far as I'm concerned. At least the way history will probably look back at it, right? So, it doesn't say who swore in H.W. Bush, but it wasn't her, I guess, is the idea.
No, it's usually the Chief Justice that swears the president.
Now, why would the Vice President have a different person?
It's Dan Quayle. I mean,
yeah.
He wanted to show how expansive his thought process was by including a female.
Oh, my gosh. The youngest Supreme Court Justice appointee was Joseph Story. He was appointed in February of 1812. How old was he at the point of appointment?
37.
He was younger.
32.
32 is what it says. That's incredible.
That's back when you really didn't go to law school. You just apprenticed.
I have a book. I have a law book.
I've read it, too.
Cover to, part of it.
I looked at all the pictures.
So what was the answer then for the Dan Quayle question?
Dan Quayle. So Sandra Day O'Connor swore in Dan Quayle in 1989, and that was the first female justice who swore in a president or vice president.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't until the late 1800s that the entire court would have said that they were all born in these United States. The following justices were foreign-born. Identify the native country for each. James Wilson was born in 1742.
In England.
It says Scotland. Oh,
okay. Scotland.
James Urdell was born in 1751.
Ireland.
Go back to where we started.
England.
Correct. David Brewer was born in 1837 in something that doesn't exist anymore.
Atlantis.
Partial credit.
Doesn't exist anymore.
Back then, where were the immigrants coming from? In the 1830s.
I mean, I'm guessing with a name like David Brewer, even though this is just an assumption, that he was sort of colonial.
Yeah.
It says here he was born in what they called Asia Minor at the time in 1837. How about George Sutherland, 1862?
Scotland.
A repeat from our
previous
list.
Yeah.
It's England.
Can we just say the UK? Yeah.
Born in 1882, the famous justice of the American Supreme Court, Felix Frankfurter.
German.
No.
Oh!
Austria?
Austria is the good runner-up. Oh. Justice Frankfurter, how do you find? I'm sorry, that's hilarious. That's awesome. What two justices were classmates at Stanford?
Sandra Day O'Connor.
And?
Kennedy?
From the modern era.
Alito?
Mm-mm.
No.
Initials W.R.?
William Rehnquist.
Rehnquist.
Wrenchberg. The one whose name Nixon couldn't remember when he was introducing him.
Wrenchberg. Who is the oldest justice who's ever sat on the Supreme Court, and how old was he?
William Howard Taft?
No. That's a good guess, though.
John Paul Stevens, is it?
Nope. Initials O.H.
Oliver Holmes.
Yes.
Oliver Wendell Holmes.
You get one guess for how old he was.
Whew.
90.
90 years old when he retired. Wow. It's a big deal.
I was just reading my students part of one of his decisions the other day.
Okay.
Not one of his best. It was Buck versus Bell.
It says William O. Douglas served the longest on the U.S. Supreme Court. In how many years?
42.
It's less.
35.
36 and 7 months is what it says. It's close enough for me.
Doesn't seem long.
Judge Thomas Johnson was guilty of the most common name ever and also served the shortest term. How long did Thomas Johnson serve on the U.S. Supreme Court?
A week.
That's pretty good. Actually, it was 14 months. 14 months. Not very long to make an impression.
The robe didn't even get crinkled.
No, it didn't have a year either. I don't recognize the name, so... Who was the only president who served as a justice?
Taft.
That's W.H. Taft.
I went to his middle school. So.
Oh, his middle school. He was franchising at that point.
His personal middle school.
Mm-hmm. What justice in a dissent in an obscenity case says, I know it when I see it?
He said that about pornography, and it was... Was that William O. Douglas?
No.
It was in his era. It was in the early 60s.
That is exactly correct. It says 64 Jacobellis versus Ohio.
Yeah, let me think.
Brandeis.
Mm-hmm. No.
Initials P.S.
Potter Stevens.
Potter Stewart.
Potter Stewart, I mean.
At least that's what it says here. Yep. Who's going to name their kid the first name Potter?
Potter Stewart.
This feels a little weird. There was a justice who played professional football.
Oh, Byron... He just died not too long ago. Byron White.
Yes, very good. For extra credit, could you identify a team for which he played?
Was this NFL?
Yeah.
Denver, I think it was.
No.
Cleveland.
In 38, he played for what were called the Pirates of Pittsburgh, but they later became the Steelers. And in 40 and 41, he played for the Lions.
Huh. Oh, wow.
A justice who played football. Makes perfect sense to me. Absolute perfect sense. When a justice retires, the rest of the court purchases a gift for he or she. What is the traditional gift given to a retiring justice?
A gavel?
Casket.
Yeah, that fits. Squeeze them in.
Oh, my
God. One size fits all. It's an accordion.
No, I want you guys to chew on this for a minute. Because, no, it's not a watch.
So a book? Robe. Some kind of book? A law
book?
It's
not a book. Nope.
It's a robe.
Nope, no robes.
Is it a serious or...
It's a serious gift. It's not a goofy... Although, that does sound like America, doesn't it?
And not like a Whitman sampler or something like that.
Right. So you're retiring after years on the bench.
A bench.
Correct.
A bench. That's it?
They either get their in-session chair or their conference room chair to keep, which is kind of nice.
It is.
So they get a used gift?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Already in the shape of their butt.
I love how you were trying to reason it out, Dan, and you emphasize the word bench, and the gym's like, yeah, what the heck, you know?
I like my answer of a casket, you know? I mean, it's thoughtful, it's useful.
Thoughtful and useful.
Thoughtful?
Oh, my
gosh. I mean, at least they let you at least see it beforehand.
When does the Supreme Court... I nearly said turn on. Yeah, I think you guys know
turn
what I mean.
On.
When
First
does it
Monday
start its session? It's October?
First Monday in October.
First Monday of October, and it closes in June.
End of June.
Because that's, I'm remembering the judgment about marriages that was made a couple of years ago. And that was like their last session.
The big ones always come out that last week.
Right, right. So what's, who knows the Supreme Court well enough right now to know what's some of the stuff coming up in the current session?
Well, the gerrymandering was just discussed last week.
That's a big deal.
The Wisconsin case, the NPR was just talking about this other day. They have the Baker. Baker out in Denver is a really big
not
one.
Not doing the wedding cake for a gay couple. That was in Denver,
Oh, my.
You think what else
is coming up?
That's not the first Baker thing, though. The Baker thing has happened like in multiple places, right?
It's gone through several different courts, but it's gone all the way up to the Supreme Court now.
Okay.
So...
I mean, very interesting.
So, there's so many interesting comments to make about this. if the baker doesn't want to bake, what's the problem? But then when you open that door, then they are allowed to discriminate against anybody. Well, but when you think about it also, so you're a gay couple, okay, I'm getting married, and I go to a baker who doesn't want to bake me a cake, but the law is going to make them bake me a cake. Do I really want to eat a cake from a baker who doesn't want to bake me a cake?
But also, they're essentially reasoning by analogy. And the problem is, which analogy is the most appropriate one? Because one of the arguments that's being made is that this is a creative task
by the
baker. And therefore, it's a First Amendment issue. Whereas, on the other hand, traditionally, people that have been allowed to run businesses and sell products have not been able to discriminate among the people that they did, because it is a privilege, after all. It's not a right to be able to run a business. It's a privilege granted by the community. So the question is, which sort of analogy is going to be the dominant one?
But if you let them discriminate that, then what about the color of your skin, your age?
Well, exactly.
So do you open that door? And if their business benefited in any way from my tax dollars,
there's a lot of subsidiary concerns to
be. But what Jim is saying is that the way they're going about arguing the case is by saying that the baker is engaging in a creative act. Right, rather than
or simply engaged
service.
In commerce, in which case it's or clearly covered already by non-discrimination law.
Just like that. The time has come for us to say goodbye after some good talk. Professor Joe Avicet.
See ya.
Professor Jim Tubbs.
Goodbye.
Professor Dan Maggio.
Enjoy your cake.
Professor Dave Chow.
See ya.
Professor Heather Hill Vasquez.
Goodbye.
And now these words.
It's an Ask the Professor. Flashback 1995.
Who said only in a police state is the job of a policeman easy?
Gore Vidal.
No, it's an American actor, director, filmmaker, stage director, theater.
Orson Welles.
That's right. All right. Orson Welles. That's right. Who said moral indignation, jealousy with a halo?
Ooh.
That's nice.
Oh, Sarah.
Is that
Sarah White? Said it.
No. And just joining us from the Department of History, the chairman of that department, Professor Sarah Gravel.
Someone sitting in my chair. I'm having my forage bowl.
Oh, it's Goldilocks.
What about your bed?
Nobody's sleeping in my
okay.
bed. Oh, you poor love.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu, tweet to us on Twitter @AskTheProfessor, or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM, or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed today by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.